This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Cotton's Gary Adams next. For 250 years, America has been shaped by the people who feed, fuel, and lead our nation. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Use code 250USA at checkout by visiting agripulse.com/subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The USDA reported cotton acres planted in the U.S. this year were up compared to recent forecasts. Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council, says the increase isn't from pull-through from the textile industry, but rather cotton as a better option than other crops. Adams says U.S. cotton faces increased global competition from other producing countries, and U.S. farmers are enduring inflation's impact on input costs.
I think it's huge. And you go back to almost kind of since COVID, and you can look at some of the prices paid information that we see in the cost of production. But I think as we have talked to cotton producers over the last, even the last 2 or 3 years, and we've seen a little bit of, you know, more of a bump in fertilizer and fuel in the first half of 2026. But that's been the issue they pointed to, and they've seen cost increase for really almost all the categories. It's not just one thing that went up. It was just general inflation catching them in the seed, in the chemicals, in the fertilizer, in the equipment, land rents. You can pretty much kind of go down the list and see the issues. And I know that out of USDA, I guess this was a couple of weeks ago, they released their latest estimates for 2026 average cost of production and then a forecast for 2027. And as you look at their forecast going into next year, cost for the 27 crop were at a record level on average for cotton. And so it's, unfortunately, we don't see a lot of relief then looking at those USDA numbers going forward.
One of the things that other row crops, and I'll say corn and soybeans in particular, the U.S. farmer is seeing increased competition from primarily Brazil. They continue to expand acres. They continue to increase production per hectare. In the U.S., how much are your cotton farmers facing competition from the rest of the globe? How is it impacting you?
Well, you hit on it when you mentioned Brazil, and the U.S. cotton farmer participates in a global marketplace. We now export between 85% and 90% of U.S. cotton production gets exported as raw fiber. The rest is consumed by the U.S. textile industry. So we're in a very competitive market where we look at who are our top competitors. Those machine picked growths that are in Brazil and Australia are two of the strongest competitors, in particular Brazil, because, you know, you go back about a decade ago and they were producing 6 to 7 million bales of cotton, and now they're getting close to 20 million bales. And it was a year or so ago that they replaced the United States as the largest exporter in the world market. And so they have the ability to expand for their cotton acres. Most of that is planted as a second crop after soybeans. I think a lot of growers look at that relationship between corn returns and cotton returns to determine what that second crop's going to be after soybeans. But we've seen them be very aggressive in expanding acreage and in the competition in the international marketplace. So very concerned because they've got a lot of potential to grow. They have high yields, very productive land.
When we talked last week with Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association's Mike Joyner, Mike shared that, you know, they're not just concerned about acres. They're concerned about industry overall. And their concern was obviously about imports and how much product coming in and a lack of labor.
my question here is, how is the cotton industry, from the ginner to the textile industry and the producer, how, what's the shape of the industry as a whole?
Well, we've certainly seen some consolidation in terms of the number of businesses that are involved in the segments. The production levels have been, you know, they go up and down depending on weather, but we've seen pressure on the various segments. I would say you can start at the textile industry, for example, and just the pressure that they have seen in the contraction. They're consuming somewhere around 1.5 million bales of cotton of the U.S. crop, and pre-COVID it was 3 million bales, and then if you go back 20 years, it was 8 to 10 million bales of the U.S. crop was being consumed by textile mills, U.S. textile mills. So there's a lot of contraction there, a lot of pressure there from imported textile and apparel products, a lot of them coming from Asia. You know, certainly some pressure that we see through the gin and the other infrastructure. You know, gin's facing increasing costs like a lot of the other segments, also face some challenges with making sure they have available labor because, you know, they're needing really seasonal workers during the gin season. So yeah, the economic pressures are out there. I think for us, as we kind of look at where the industry is headed or what the future is, we've got a good safety net that was in, the One Big Beautiful Bill passed last year. So that's really helped. I think now we're looking at what can we do to try to build demand for cotton going forward.
So we'll move to Farm Bill 2.0, but I'll go back to a conversation that we had here on the program a few weeks ago with Senator Hyde Smith, and she was very enthused about the Buying American Cotton Act. Gary, what's in that legislation and how would it help the industry?
Yeah, we were very appreciative of Senator Hyde Smith to introduce that legislation, and the concept in that legislation really came out of some industry discussions going back now a couple of years, where we were trying to look at ways that we could build demand for U.S. cotton. And we realized that we have the largest retail market for textile and apparel products. U.S. consumers, with the number of consumers we have and with the purchasing power, buy a lot of textile products each year. Yet not much of that is, on our estimation, actually included U.S. cotton. It was either international cottons or a lot of products made from synthetic fibers. What we wanted to look at was a way to incentivize supply chains to use more U.S. cotton. And the incentive in the legislation is to provide those brands and retailers that are offering products into the U.S. market the opportunity for tax credits. And so that is what the Buying American Cotton Act would do, is authorize tax credits that are tied back to the amount of U.S. cotton that you document the use of in those supply chains. And then those tax credits would go to brands and retailers. Where we, what we see as a benefit all the way back through the industry is they're going to be sending the signal through the supply chain that you need to be using U.S. cotton in your products as opposed to Brazilian, Australian, or some other growth of cotton. So we are very excited about what the positive impact would be if we can get, you know, that, that concept, that legislation all the way across the finish line.
One of the conversations taking place in the industry is about a bioeconomy and bioproducts. We've seen the U.S. Grains Council now include U.S. grains and bioproducts. Cotton, I would suggest, is the original bio. And as people are looking to be more health conscious and more concerned about the environment, it would seem that cotton would fit that role.
I think it does, and that's a part of what we're trying to do as an industry as well, is raise the awareness of the natural products of cotton, the fact that it is bio-based, the fact that it's biodegradable. It does not persist in the environment as we see from other products, and specifically when we look at textile and apparel products produced from polyester and other petroleum-based fibers, we know that those fibers do not break down in the environment. Now we're seeing more and more evidence about essentially microfibers, which way to think about that is the shedding that comes off of those clothes that, you know, that gets in the air we breathe and the water we drink. We're seeing it in the food we eat. So more and more of that is being detected. And that's, an effort we have in the industry is to try to raise the awareness about textile products, synthetic textile products being a source of microplastics and microfibers, and make sure that consumers understand cotton is an actual alternative to that. And we've launched a campaign called Plant Not Plastic back in September of 2025. And really with that focus of raising that awareness and making sure that consumers appreciate the benefits of cotton.
Has the industry developed cotton blended products that fit with an active lifestyle that maybe don't need an iron and ironing board? And is that finding a way into the demand of the consumer today?
I do think the industry is always looking at ways that we can adapt and enhance cotton products to meet the needs of the consumers. And whether that is trying to go with some finishes that are more wrinkle resistant, that do not need the ironing, or like you said, looking at blends, you know, a very much a predominantly cotton product that may have, you know, 2 to 5% of say spandex or some other product blended in with it. So that's an opportunity. I think there's a lot of work that's going on to look at how cotton can get into markets that, you know, particularly in the athleisure, such as yoga pants that have traditionally always been polyester, that there's some opportunities there as well. But and a lot of that is really anchored on some of the research that goes on in Cotton Incorporated is, okay, how can we look at new use of cotton and new attributes to add to a cotton product so that it does appeal to today's lifestyle and today's consumer?
Gary, what about USMCA?
USMCA is critical when we look at the trade that goes on in the Western Hemisphere. You know, certainly understand the Trump administration is moving into a period now of reviewing USMCA. I think there are some things probably when you look at enforcement and monitoring the trade that can be improved. But our position will be that the rules of origin that apply to textile products, those are critical to continue in USMCA, and the two-way trade that goes on between the U.S. and Mexico under USMCA is critical to cotton and textiles. And it along with CAFTA DR gives us a strong demand base in this hemisphere. And we, you know, it's important we maintain both of those agreements.
Gary, the corn farmer has benefited from demand for their crop for ethanol, and then it creates some byproducts. So as cotton is for the fiber, are there other opportunities that are developing for the cotton industry that would allow you to prosper, whether it's for fuel or whether it's for other uses?
I think where one of the areas we need to really look at and see an opportunity in on the cotton side, and particularly some of the byproducts that come out of the ginning process, is more in the non-woven uses for cotton. And when I say non-woven, we obviously think about the vast majority of cotton going into things like apparel products, into home goods such as sheeting and towels. But a lot of opportunity when we look again at what we refer to as linters and motes and some of those really short fibers that come out of the ginning process to have some opportunities in non-wovens, whether that be health and beauty aid products, whether it be, you know, dollar bills, for example, that include cotton fibers, whether it be in ammunition and munitions, which has a cellulosic component included in it. So we see, you know, we do see some growth areas there when we look at the opportunity for some of the byproducts, particularly out of the ginning process, to start making its way into more non-woven uses. A lot of research going on, too, and how that cellulosic material could be better used.
President Trump is asking for dollars from Congress, obviously, to fund the war with Iran. He's talking about E-15, but he also has a request for $11 billion for another round of bridge assistance. How did the cotton farmer fare in the first round of bridge, and is there a need in a second round?
Actually, in the first round, cotton came out fairly well in terms of looking at the per acre payments, and it's roughly $117 per acre for the planted acreage in 2025. So we're very pleased with how the first farmer bridge assistance payments went out. You know, unfortunately, it was such a large payment because when you look at cost of production relative to market returns, there was such a substantial gap between those two numbers. I think as we look at the new request, we're very grateful to see President Trump bring that request forward. We know there's interest from both Senator Bozeman and Senator Hoeven. They both talked about the need for additional assistance. And unfortunately, even though we've seen some strength in the cotton market over the last 3 or 4 months, we're still not at a level where we're meeting those cost of production. Yes, there's still a need. There's still a lot of economic pressure out there in the industry. So hopefully Congress will find a path forward with a vehicle, whether that's a supplemental or some type of reconciliation bill or some other vehicle going forward.
Farmers this year were caught in a situation that the price of fertilizer went up, but the question was it even going to be available? And now that the conflict is back on strongly between the U.S. and Iran, is there a concern about available supply, the price that you would pay, and your thoughts on USDA investing in this area to try to increase domestic production?
Well, we certainly appreciate USDA's work to try to, and their investment to increase production. We also appreciate some of the effort, some of the actions taken by Trump administration to remove some of those tariffs on products coming into the United States. So I do think there's been some positives there to try to mitigate some of the price increase. You know, when we look at some of the surveys and we talk to growers, there were some of the growers that had some availability issues. And maybe it was more the case they couldn't get their first choice of what they wanted to use as fertilizer. So perhaps they had to pivot to something else. I think the bigger issue was, even regardless of what they found, it was still much more expensive than last year. I do think there's a concern going into the fall that if the conflict continues to drag out, you have a lot of fall applications of fertilizer. Where a producer is going to stand at that point? Will they try to push some of those applications out into the spring in hopes that by then maybe we've seen some relief on the pricing side?
What are your thoughts on Farm Bill 2.0, and what does the cotton farmer need to be resolved in this piece of legislation?
I think there are a couple of things in there that we're watching in this legislation, and understanding that a lot of the, you know, the safety net, the support prices were addressed when Congress did the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. But having said that, there's still some important issues being addressed in Farm Bill 2.0 as they relate to research programs, as they relate to conservation programs. Also, the funding for some of the trade promotion programs through MAP and FMD, which are critical to the U.S. cotton industry. Also, there's language in there that would secure or guarantee that a marketing loan for cotton and other commodities would continue to operate in the event of a government shutdown, because we've seen in previous shutdowns that becomes a real disruption to marketing opportunities when that happens. There's also some insurance products for cotton that would be addressed in this farm bill as well. So a number of important issues will be addressed. I wish I could had a crystal ball to tell you what the timing is in terms of, say, committee action and a markup. I still, though, you know, as I look toward the legislative calendar for the rest of the year, still try to hold out some confidence that Congress will get this finished up this year, but it may very well have to be put in as part of a bigger piece of legislation, and that may be something that's all the way out until the lame duck.
Well, in the conversation that Senator Grassley had with farm media this past week, obviously suggesting the countdown for E15 legislation is running out rapidly, but mentioned that farm bill might be something that's addressed after the election. Clearly it's an issue that has still several sticking points. One other that was resolved perhaps by the Supreme Court was who had the ultimate say what should be on the label. Gary, we are seeing the introduction of biologicals into crop production, but still chemistry. How big is this issue for cotton farmers to know that they have products that are available and that there is a gateway for new products to be introduced to help their productivity and their sustainability?
Well, it is huge, and we were pleased with the Supreme Court decision you know, to provide some of that protection so that we know that farmers have access to those products. And you're right, there's research underway that are looking at new modes of action or biologics that can work. And certainly farmers are open to trying those if they're effective. But you know, some of the long-standing products that we've used are still necessary to make sure that we, that farmers have access to those tools and produce what they need. You know, we're hopeful that we can continue to see some approvals come out of EPA on new products and some of the re-registration of labels that are necessary. I do think when we look at some of the challenges that are facing production agriculture is one of them is the length of time that it takes to get through the regulatory process in the United States. And that does limit the number of tools and the new technologies that come to farmers. And I think at the end of the day, it hurts our international competitiveness, makes farmers less productive, probably keeps their cost higher than it should be otherwise. So I do hope there can be some, you know, some way to address the regulatory process going forward. And again, you still got to rely on sound science, but just try to shorten the length of time that it takes to get all the way through the process.
Whether it's animal feed or whether it's chemistries used in the field, we found that the U.S. is no longer the first place for these products to be introduced. And with the regulatory red tape that's in the U.S. and the cost of registration, farmers in Brazil and other portions of the world are getting first shot at some of those new technologies. That appears to be a concern.
Well, and I think that comes back to the international competitiveness issue of knowing we're operating in global commodity markets. If other growers, you know, have the advantage of having a process that either takes less time, allows them to have access to these new products ahead of U.S. growers, then it puts growers at a disadvantage. So again, I think that is a significant challenge that hopefully can get addressed, and that also people realize if we don't address it, then we're simply, you know, exporting production agriculture to other countries.
Well, Gary Adams, we want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us here on this edition of Open Mic. It is certainly a busy time in agriculture with so many different issues going across the country and in Washington. Thanks for being here. Gary, it is Open Mic, and today you have an open mic.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk about the challenges facing the cotton industry. And certainly our cotton producers and the industry as a whole has gone through some tough economic challenges. And a lot of those challenges continue. But I do think there's some reasons if we look to the future with some of the initiatives the industry's got underway, some of the opportunities that could present themselves with new legislation. There are reasons to be optimistic, and we are starting to see, I think, a little bit of momentum building on the demand side. And at the end of the day, that's where the success is ultimately going to be found, is building demand for U.S. cotton and making sure that we have that demand base out in front of us.
Our thanks to this week's guest, Gary Adams, President and CEO of the National Cotton Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic brought to you by AgriPulse. Celebrate America's 250th year with AgriPulse and save $250 on your first subscription. Don't miss the news that matters most. Subscribe to AgriPulse today. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.